Conciliums with Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie.
The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this. But I will make lewd sounds like...
Wow. So, Pete, what was it that you felt like we hadn't gotten to last time?
I don't think we've gotten to the topic about what is and is appropriate for kids in the science realm and the humanities realm. And you talked about the conflict between religion and science. Religion is part of the humanities realm, right? It is a cultural phenomenon.
I feel like you led us to the religion and science thing.
Well, because that's the most controversial one. You might as well go for the throat, go for the juggler.
Why is it the most controversial one? Controversial.
Are you trying to pronounce menstruation or aluminium?
I'm pretty tired.
As it's written.
And it's very cold in the
why?
Studio.
Because religion...
If I were a basil
purports,
plant, I would be slowly wilting.
Religion purports to...
The pesto you made out of me would be ugly.
Why are you a basil plant being ground up for pesto?
Did you not hear what I said? In this cold, if I was a basil plant, I'd be slowly wilting.
I think you'd be wilting if you were a lot of different species of plants, not just basil. Why basil?
Because that's the plant that we watched melt.
Oh. We meaning?
My wife and I, we had some basil in the back. Basil in the back.
So.
Planted an Englishman.
You mean one of the many herbs? I love. So if you talk about literal pronunciation of words, the British are kings for that. They say herb, because it's got an H. And they do say aluminium, which is actually correct. We say aluminum.
Aluminum.
But it's actually spelled more like aluminium.
I can't even picture the word in my head.
But, so that's what you did this weekend.
You
just sat around, well, honey, let's go watch the basil plant wilt.
I feel like
you need to get out
you
more.
Added a few things to that story.
As what, I always do.
How do you define appropriate?
I don't. You know, and I define it very different. I'm a hippie liberal college
so
professor.
So I mean this sincerely when I ask you this. Yeah. So what does it matter to you what's appropriate? Why are you considering it? How do you use this? How do you use, is it appropriate? What's appropriate?
So,
when is it appropriate?
I think most things are appropriate for kids when they are curious about them. And if they have a question, you sort of show it to them. I don't think you want to shock them.
Right.
I don't think you want to say, well, some people die of cancer and show them wilting away in hospice. It's okay to say, someday, Jimmy, we'll all die. And that's just the way the
world
works.
How old is Jimmy in this?
I don't. That's hypothetical. Let's make him 12 because we've identified 12 as the cusp.
That was last show.
Well, can I continue defining?
Maybe he should be 13 now.
The cusp between the teen and the tween. When did we invent that word, tween?
Maybe it should be, I think, when Twilight was published. I think it should be pubescent is what this show should be.
You're always getting down to hormone regulation and body function.
This is the question I want to ask you.
I don't like pubescent.
Why do you care what's appropriate? If you don't think inappropriate and appropriate are things to define,
I do care.
Why do you
care? I think that it is not right to utterly shock the crap out of small children. Right?
Okay, well, what does that mean?
That means when you say, well, Jimmy's my generic 12-year-old.
Jimmy's your 13-year-old.
Let me tell you about AIDS and how you die with fungus on your skin and
you know what's
like
really
that.
Crazy? I mean, that is a defining moment of my childhood was sex ed when I was 16. Mm-hmm. It was all AIDS. And in fact, when 88, no, so 15, 16, that cusp, you know, like that's when the real full-blown AIDS information campaign mm-hmm. with what was Ronald Reagan's son's name? Was he Ron Reagan Jr.?
He does have a son named Ron Reagan Jr.
So I think it was Ron Reagan Jr. was in one of the videos and actually did the thing, banana, condom. He was like, I wish there was an easier way to show you this. And they put the condom on the banana.
Okay.
You know? Like that was when sex really became a thing that I was going to be concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
I was told it will kill you.
Yeah, it was very different for me. It didn't start to kill you yet.
A fundamental building block. Yeah, you had something taken away. It was handed to me with the skull and crossbones on it.
Okay. But, you know, it was a serious thing. Condoms became much more important.
Yeah, no,
not just for birth control, but for...
It's a foundational moment in my sense of self, my personality, and my relationship to the world.
I saw that more when I was an adult, and but yeah, it was interesting. They told it changed you, the way you dated.
Hey, Pete, party's over. That's what that announcement was.
No, it changed
for you.
The way you dated, and people got AIDS tests, and people used condoms for quite some time. You know, if you started a relationship, that's how you did it. It was, and this is science. These are the good recommendations. There is this disease. Here's how it spread. You should do this. Condoms are a good, but albeit imperfect way to do it.
Okay, wait. But that's not science. That's not science. Science is the finding out what it was, finding out how it's transmitted. But the telling people the rules is not science. Telling people, here's how to avoid it. Saying to people, when you start a relationship, be sure to use prophylactic contraception.
Why isn't that science?
This is like when we talked about someone saying, oh, I love science, and what they really like is landscape photography, right? Science is not an entity that tells you things, right? Science is a practice. And a
but it is a method for investigating the physical nature of the world and the archive of that discovery.
Right. So you're saying science is also now a sort of a policy generator that you're adding to, quote, science.
No. It's not policy is what they will use science to inform. But let's go way back before people believed that venereal diseases.
Why are you dodging my question?
No, I'm going way back. You're thinking of modern science. But there was a time where science said, hey, venereal diseases are spread by, microbes, and using a condom is a good way to significantly reduce the spread of that. There was a time before that that people believed you could be cured of venereal diseases by having sex with a virgin.
Now, see, that's a difference.
What a ridiculous view.
That's because where are you going to find one? That's a different kind of definition of science also.
No, I don't think so.
You just said people believed. You didn't say science told us. You said people believed.
But science told us that was not true.
Science didn't tell us anything, Pete. Science is not a person.
Okay.
Science is not a thing that can communicate.
Right, but once we discovered the physical principle of how venereal diseases
were spread.
You might
as well say poetry tells us.
You know? I can't say that.
Poetry doesn't say anything.
What does poetry
tell us stuff. Poetry is a form that people sometimes use to try and communicate their emotional life, their histories, and their abstract ideas when they want to play without a net.
So what you're saying is the disconnect is that science discovered how venereal diseases were spread, but someone has to decide what to tell them.
You keep saying it like science is a thing. Science is not a thing. I mean, okay, technically it's a thing. Science is not a person who can discover stuff, right? Science is, it's a practice, right?
Right. And that practice.
That people have to guide, that people have to apply.
Right. The application of that practice told us how venereal diseases were spread, period. I stand by that.
Once again, no, it didn't.
What did it do?
You discovered relationships, right?
Okay.
People, a person.
Right.
There's no passive construction here.
Right, but a person applying the scientific method discovered significant correlation and then later causal relationships between venereal diseases and sexual contact.
And then what did that person do, or persons, because it was probably a group of people?
Well, they probably published it in a peer-reviewed journal.
Right. Now that is what you elide when you say science tells us, because science doesn't tell us shit. People do.
Okay.
And I think I think that's a fundamental problem with how people think about science. You know, because people know when they talk about writers and composers and artists, they know that they're talking about people who are putting certain practices to work for their own ends, right? But then we say stuff like science tells us,
Well, you don't get to use the royal science until many people come to the same conclusion. And there is consilience of ideas.
I think.
See how I worked that in there?
These days, it's just consensus, really, isn't it?
Okay, consensus.
Because people
consensus
say,
ideas.
The scientific consensus. But what they're really saying is what those people are saying. Whoa. Wow.
He's fallen into an adjective pit.
Grammatical crash and burn. That's terrible. Okay. 97% of climate scientists, right? Versus 3% of climate scientists, That's the kind of argument. Not
okay.
Science tells us no. Science tells us this other thing, right? Science doesn't tell us anything.
So what am I allowed to say? The consensus of scientific researchers.
I just wanted you to understand what I was trying to say.
Right, but I think you're dawdling on a banal point. Or do you say banal?
What do I say? I think I used to say banal.
Okay, so what am I allowed to say? You're just restricting me with your arbitrary humanities rules. Ha!
Arbitrary humanities.
Huzzah! I scoff in your face.
I'm asking you to construct the problem, to present the situation accurately, and to not remove certain pieces of the puzzle. Because if we're talking about how people perceive science, you know, and we're talking about how people perceive public policy that is crafted or adapted because of the end results of scientific research, which by people, you know, by people who are funded, by people who are,
science is always changing,
wealthy,
right?
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Are you saying that science is sometimes biased?
Yeah, sure.
Sometimes it is. Everything in the human endeavor is potentially biased.
And I would have to say sometimes scientists are biased.
They are. You know? I think we're less biased than most politicians.
That's what I want you to say. I want you to say scientists, like you said, politicians. Because do you say politics tells us that, you know, America is awesome? Or politics tells us that America is a declining superpower? You don't say that.
I don't say that.
Politics is the practice.
Right, but the consensus of many scientists practicing this particular scientific method indicate
absolutely
that venereal diseases can be prevented by the use of condoms.
Sure, okay, yeah.
Is there anyone that disagrees with that? Because we understand the mechanism. It's bodily fluid passage.
I'm sure some people disagree with that.
They do, but if it's only a couple percent,
I can call them that, the right? Net jobs. Some people disbelieve that.
Right, right. But I am armed with what I think is a reasonable conclusion.
Disbelieve is almost like, you know, that's taking belief out. So it's almost like scientists are disbelievers, right? Because you want to remove belief.
Okay.
Would you say?
But I don't believe or not believe in the spreading of venereal diseases. It's just the way it is. And I adapt this view, and this view has served me well because I have never once contracted a venereal disease.
I was about to ask, I mean, are we spending all this time on this because of your gonorrhea? are you worried?
No.
You know, I hear that about 15% of people who've never seen The Godfather also contract gonorrhea in their late middle age.
This factoid brought to you by Charlie Bennett.
So what's your point, Pete?
Yeah, you're taking me away from the point. The point was...
Mission accomplished.
I think a lot of people can take very mature subjects that may be disturbing and present them...
So is maturity signified by disturbing? Or, well, like, what's the... Because, again, back to inappropriate...
Are you just Captain Contrarian today? You're not going to let me get a word in edgewise.
I'm not Captain Contrarian. I just think that... I think in this case, it was like when we talked last time, and... we were talking about evolution and what was the other one? Gay rights? Evolution and...
Yeah. So gay rights is a good example.
Jumped there when we were talking about what can the humanities and science, deliver? What can these two... in humanities and the natural sciences.
Yeah, I think it's harder for the humanities because they take on the social and the metaphysical and the psychological... and the policy implications of a scientific discovery, where people can simply say 10% or whatever it is of people.
Humanities scholars. Okay. Same problem as the other thing.
Humanities scholars?
Yeah.
Why is there a problem with humanities scholars?
No, I'm saying you said the humanities, but that's the same as saying science, right? Like,
okay.
The fields.
The people that work in humanities.
Right, yeah.
Ah, but there is one fundamental difference between science and the humanities in that respect, and that's the gap.
What's the gap?
Mind the gap.
Mind the gap. Fourth floor.
There are many So if you look at, you know, professional humanitarian scholars, humanities scholars.
That's a different meaning.
Yeah, that's a different, yeah, okay. Humanities scholars. You know, these are experts. They've studied, they have advanced degrees, all this sort of stuff. And then there is just the person that's not necessarily
Some of them
with
hold
that.
Very high positions.
In between, there is a continuum of people who have varying degrees of understanding and appreciation for humanities. That is less so in the sciences. Less so.
Explain that more a little with a little more meat on its bones.
Well, let's pick an example to illustrate the meat. Pick an area in humanities that you like or dislike.
Well, I love music. I mean, okay. I'm down
yeah,
for
so music is an
time.
Excellent example, right? So there are people that you know have PhDs in music theory, and they teach music theory, and they you know compose, and they analyze, and they critique. Well, and then there are people who just like to listen to snappy tunes on the radio.
As soon as you go to school for composition, like you're light years away from the popular music consumer.
But in between, the guy who just likes snappy tunes on the radio and the doctorate professor of music who teaches music theory, there is the entire spectrum.
Yeah.
There are people that are very close to that guy.
You and I are both amateur players.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we've both written music.
I do.
You still do? I do
not
anymore.
I don't write a lot of original music, but I've done a lot of arrangements.
Yeah.
And I played, let me try to think. I've gotten paid, so I'm going to call myself a professional.
Oh, okay, nice.
I was not a member of the Musicians Union.
Amateur. I'm always amateur.
My brother was.
What would the equivalent be then in science?
There's less of that in science. There are people with the PhDs,
like
and then there are people that are fascinated by science.
We talk about Lorenzo's oil.
That would be a good example, but Lorenzo's oil is the exception rather than the rule.
Yeah.
Those folks were the citizen scientists that really got close to the high level of science by reviewing the journal articles. I think what you'll find is journal articles are very impenetrable.
So I think you've slid Steve Jobs and Bill Gates aside.
I have.
Well, I'm thinking is are those engineers in your mindset? Because both those guys did not go to college, right? Or wait, did Bill Gates go to college and Steve Jobs did not?
Most of them dropped out.
Yeah.
You know, if you make a profound discovery, did what's his name from Facebook finish?
I'm sure he did. Well,
no, I don't know that he did. I mean, I discount people that are brilliant who sometime during their career form a profound organization that changes the world. That's different. I don't think you have to have a graduate degree to be brilliant.
No, that's not my argument at all. I'm just saying that they are one of the flagpoles for that. That continuum when it comes to science.
Yes, they are. They are. No,
right?
But I mean, that's what I'm saying. Those guys are.
So are you discounting engineering? Because I think in engineering,
I'm just
inventors.
Saying there is less of that in the middle.
The dude who made the ShamWow.
Yeah, there are a few people in the middle, but they're less. Whereas there are millions of people in the middle that do that continuum of music. There are just a handful that do that in science. And that's what makes those folks all the more extraordinary. Lorenzo's oil is an excellent example.
Is that because of the tools? Is that because, I mean, would you say, aren't there thinkers? People who just contemplate the universe, right? They are, in a way, a scientist. If the Bible is a scientific text.
I believe that.
Yeah.
I believe it was the first scientific text.
See, I don't believe that, but
That's okay.
I'm using what you think to describe.
You're using it against me.
Not against, next to.
To enrage and frustrate
I'm
me.
Rubbing your beliefs against you in order to achieve some kind
like
of reaction.
You like that rub up against metaphor a lot.
You're the one who has a problem when I touch your microphone. Are we done? We're not done.
No, well,
not even close to done.
But that's what I'm saying. You know, scientists, as long as they couch it in, you know, consensus studies and fact, they figure they can whip anything on kids. In fact, a good example would be
that
if you look at books on infectious diseases, one of the things teachers do, you want to know about venereal disease, and they open up a book.
Here's
to
a picture of some genital warts.
A colleague of mine did that at a lecture.
Why did he do that? Why did she do that?
She was a physician, and she was trying to illustrate something. And she showed this picture of genital warts that almost made me lose my lunch, man. It was like,
They're not cool, man.
No, they're not. But but we feel as though we can say, look, in the name of science, I can show you this grotesque example of physiology. Whereas I don't think you could do that in humanities. Could you?
Yeah, you could say, I don't want to just hear stories about puppy dogs and fairy tales. I want to I want to delve into the serial killers mindset. You know, that this art is not worth it unless it it causes me discomfort and pushes me out of my discomfort and pushes me out of comfort zone is where I wanted to go, but then that sounded ridiculous. There are folks who let me roll it back. I played in a band in high school. The drummer was a big fan of things like Boston. Not the city.
The music band. Group. I like Boston.
Sure.
Who doesn't like Dust in the Wind, man?
Okay. So that was Kansas.
Oh, that was Kansas. Crap. What did Boston sing? More Than a Feeling?
More Than a Feeling.
Okay. Who doesn't like More Than a Feeling?
You can't see it, but I'm raising my hand.
Okay.
I'm not a big fan. I mean, it's cool.
Okay.
Not cool, like cool, man. It's just that's cool. It does not make. Here's the thing. I just want to get this down.
He's trapped in a death spiral. I just want to put critique.
I just want to put this into audio. I just want to point out, if you were to take away Bono's vocals from the new U2 album, you would not be surprised to hear that it was a Katy Perry album. Just wanted to say that.
Okay.
So, he said he liked Boston, and I was not really cool with that. I wanted something else, you know? And he said to me, Charlie, you know, you don't have to be physically buffeted by the music for it to be good, right? And I thought, no, I think you do. I'm less like that now. But what I wanted...
Does this mean I throw a speaker at your head? Wham!
A little bit. A little bit. Well, I mean, what we were talking about was
that
stuff that was cool with me was what could create a mosh pit. That was what I liked.
Okay.
Right?
But to me, that's just taste. You like the mosh pit. I don't.
It is taste, but also I think the source of it. Because, you know, what I listen to now are things like I listen to Omar's The Red CD.
Say that three times real fast.
Omar's The Red CD. I can't do it. So, like, it's noise. You know?
I mean, like... Noise?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. Imagine a car crash in a Sparks factory on Mars.
Okay, I'm working on that one.
Yeah, it's like that.
All right, so get to your point about Boston and this guy, your drummer. So I was the drummer. Drummers are the troublemakers.
But that's my point. My point is that was my point. He said you don't have to actually be, you know, music does not have to be violent. It does not have to injure you or your soul to be good.
I concur.
Right. At the time, I did not.
Okay.
And that is, in one way, an artistic equivalent of, for the good of science, I'm going to show you this horrible thing. Or for the good of humanity, I'm going to show you this horrible thing that is brought to you by scientific research. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We're talking about genital warts. What I'm saying is genital warts and the New York Art Quartet. Same thing.
But I think...
Are you just going to let that go by?
No,
come on.
No, I don't. Are you going to... I mean, you're allowed to say that the presentation may not be appropriate for a fifth grader, but I don't think you're allowed to say the content. I think...
The concept?
Keep changing the words that are coming out of your mouth. Like, I'm some puppet, and you have your hand up my butt going, no, the concept... And by the way, I saw an ad for Avenue Q.
Yeah.
I didn't know they were paper bag puppets.
Oh, I didn't know they were paper. I thought they were Muppets.
I thought they were too.
They're paper bag puppets?
Maybe this is a ripoff of Avenue Q. I think I saw a bunch of paper bag puppets. I was very disturbed. I wanted some serious Jim Henson action. That's what I wanted.
It's important to me that the words are the right words.
Okay.
And I think that when you just kind of roll over a concept with some cliches, you know, and some sort of
I don't think I was doing that. I think words. You are so anal retentive this morning.
When you say the content, but the delivery, like, you're saying
the content and the delivery are different.
But you're saying a 5-year-old should know about genital warts? See, that's what I'm saying, right? Like,
I think a 5-year-old should.
The concept that things can make you sick, right? Yeah.
They should understand about disease theory.
Disease theory? How would you make them understand about disease theory?
So that they know to do something my son used to do on a regular basis.
That's not the answer to my question at all.
At the Atlanta Zoo. Don't lick the railing.
How?
Don't lick the railing.
Yeah, but that's just a rule.
Wash your hands.
Is that disease theory or is that just rule?
That is a rule based on disease theory.
Do they know that? Do these kids know
it? Germ theory. I believe if you understand the reasons for things, then you won't just see things as arbitrary rules. Like, hey, wash your hands. Hey, don't lick the railing. Why? Because germs are there and they will make you very sick.
At what age do you want to tell kids that there's invisible things on everything that can get on them?
Well, certainly before he was 10. And even when he was 10, he'd still lick the railing and invariably get sick when we went to the zoo.
Why was Dylan licking the railing?
I don't know. Perhaps it was his artistic expression and I can blame the humanities. Right? So people that are just like, hey, man. I'll lick the railing if I want to. You're not going to control me, man. I'm like, okay, but then you'll get sick. Be prepared for the consequences. And if he's prepared for the consequences, that's great. That's great. I don't think he was.
And so he licked the railing for no good reason.
Perhaps he was just a rebel.
Is there a good reason to lick the railing? Just to show the man that I don't care about his rules.
You know, I won't judge the artists. Perhaps sometimes there is, but you have to be prepared for the consequences. Is there a good reason to engage in irresponsible sexual behavior? Well, it's sex. People like it. Maybe that's the reason.
There's a reason. It might not be good.
Yeah, but it may not be a good reason.
Might
and
not be you, coherent.
If you
might not be
contract
a quality
venereal
reason.
Diseases, that is a problem.
Yeah, but if you can clear those up with a shot, maybe it's worth it.
But in the humanities, when do they decide when something's rated PG or PG-13? When do they say that you shouldn't take a 10-year-old to see Equus? When
okay, well,
they...
now those are two very different things.
That's
right?
All I wanted to talk about, and you took me down a death spiral of word selection that drove me nuts.
Let me see if I can be very, very direct and careful about this.
You be direct and careful? I don't think you've done that all day.
There's nothing scholarly about how movies are rated.
What do you mean by that?
The Motion Picture Association of America is not an academic group, nor do they use any sort of data, you know, to make decisions about what's
it's really
acceptable
like
or not.
Justice Potter Stewart from the Supreme Court who said, I can't define pornography, but I know it when I see it.
Now, they might count.
A bunch of little old ladies going, hey, that's no good.
Yeah, they might count things. They might use data from the movie itself. Like, well, they say these words this number of times.
Yeah.
There are 3 instances of violence, that kind of thing.
Right.
But
they don't use children will be traumatized and end up as hooligans.
Right.
They watch Peter Griffin.
Has there been research into that? Like,
there has been some research into it, but I'm not sure the Motion Picture Association of America uses it.
But has there been some sort of, we're going to expose these kids to these 16 kids are going to watch these movies, and these 16 kids are going to watch these movies, and these movies have 13 instances of violence.
I don't think they're trying to say these are hard and fast indicators. I think they're just trying to give some guidelines to parents.
Right, right.
And so, that's a good thing. I'm all for that.
But it's not scholarly. I mean, it was this is a history that I'm not completely clear on.
Mm-hmm.
But originally there was a code. I think it was the Hays Code, which was very very Catholic because it was created by a Catholic group in California.
Yet again, I'm getting the blame for that one.
I don't think of you as a Catholic.
Okay, I was. I was an altar boy, man. I thought about becoming a priest. Isn't that a hoot? Could you see me in confession? Well, yeah, whatever. As long as nobody got hoit.
Can you sum it up as why you thought about it?
Because the Catholic Church is an imposing edifice. They're like...
So that's what the Hays Code was about. I'm pretty sure it was Hays Code.
Yeah.
It was just this very imposing thing. Like, essentially, the group was suggesting to the studios in Hollywood, if your movies don't follow these rules, you know, if they go against the code of conduct that we're describing...
A ton of Catholics will boycott them.
People are not going to be cool with you. That's right.
Okay.
And then I think people started to... maybe suggest that possibly a religious group should not be you know, creating the atmosphere of censorship. Not literal censorship, right, but the atmosphere of censorship.
Right, but it's a free country. If your religious folks don't want to watch their movies, that's okay.
Yeah, well, yeah, if they decide on their own. But I think that people became uncomfortable with the idea that someone could say, because you're Catholic, don't watch this movie. Trust me, I'm a little closer to the Pope than you.
Which is why I'm not Catholic anymore.
So then the MPAA, I mean, Jack Valenti, right? He's like 117 years old.
Is he like Jack LaLanne? He's also an old guy. I think Jack LaLanne finally passed away.
I think the original members of the MPAA, mm-hmm. you know, are only just now retiring or dying. You know, it's young. It's a young thing, you know, and they came up with that set of, you know, G, P, G, okay. R, and X, right?
Right, and now we have, what is it?
NC-17 and
PG-13. NC-17 and PG-13, right?
Yeah, each one designed to sort of, well, PG-13 came out because they were like, we got to figure out a way to, you know, get the teenagers.
Deal with teens and tweens.
But let's remember this, right? This is all about an industry. This is all about money being
they're
made.
They're trying to make money.
Because mm-hmm. the reason that X suddenly became X-rated film is now a pornographic film, triple X. Those mean nothing, right? The MPAA did not copyright, did not trademark the original set of ratings.
Okay.
So X, which originally was supposed to be, this is an X-rated movie. This is some serious stuff. You can't even bring in the 17-year-olds. You know, you gotta really be careful.
Right.
Became, this is, you know, explicit hardcore pornography.
Okay.
But that's never what they meant it to signify. Like Midnight Cowboy is X-rated. And I think last time
you're kidding.
Woo!
Is it really?
Let's go to the phones.
I have to challenge that factoid. Alex, I'll take Midnight Cowboy for 200. Well, but that's what NC-17 is for.
Yeah,
it's to differentiate art from pure sexuality.
Well, it's
now
just,
they
it's
have
just
their own
a,
domain, .x.
It's an unsexy, there we go, pow.
You are correct. But Midnight Cowboy, is this considered a critically acclaimed film?
For sure. Look, 1969.
I like it. I think it's a very
Tango
poignant message.
In
message.
Paris also ended up with a...
About survival in the big city. Last Tango in Paris.
Oh, interesting. So that must have been not rated at the time. Because this came out in 73.
We did not have NC-17 in 73.
But now it's
they must have re-rated it. You can resubmit it.
Yeah.
But Midnight Cowboy airs late night on regular TV. I've seen it.
Yeah, but I'm sure it was cut. Oh, yeah, there we go. Re-rating. Argentina, originally X. Here's the thing. I've been listening to a lot of Greg Proop's podcast. Yeah, look, USA X. And he has a great time mispronouncing words, like overpronouncing words. Mm-hmm. And so Argentina, Georgia would be something
you
that
mean
he would
like
say.
Menstruation?
Yeah, I think that's how you're supposed to say it.
No, but to me, I find it useful as a parent, as a guideline. I have allowed my children, long before they were 17, to see R-rated movies.
Say that again.
I have allowed my children to see R-rated movies.
But no, what was the dependent clause you tossed in there at the beginning? Something.
Before they were 17.
Before they were 17.
Yeah, my daughter was 16 and three quarters, and she wanted to see Bridesmaids.
Well, there's no way that, like, 4 months of life suddenly changes something, right?
I mean, she wanted to go see it with her friend, and who also was about to turn 17. They were in high school, and they wanted to see Bridesmaids, which was hilarious.
I don't know that there's anything in Bridesmaids that... is so transgressive that you have to
there's
allow.
A lot of poop jokes.
Yeah.
There's but a lot of vomiting jokes. Some people are offended by that.
Offense. I mean, but offense is not
hilarious.
What this is for. That's the other thing. Like, it's not for offense, right? MPAA ratings aren't supposed to be for offense.
Someone get their anal sphincter bleached. Maybe that was offensive to
people. Yes.
And
when she likes her bleached asshole.
That's just funny.
Oh, she likes her new asshole.
I sat in here with a ton. It was 90% women, my daughter, and her friend. You talk about embarrassing. Not for me, but for her.
My 2-year-old daughter is
fascinated.
Wanted
to see Bridesmaids?
No, she's fascinated by poop.
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, it's not something that's inappropriate to her. It's not something, you know.
Bridesmaids was a very funny, and you know, would you take, I think if you took a 6-year-old there, they wouldn't get most of the jokes. Yeah. And that's what I tell a lot of parents. I say, if you're going to bring a grade schooler, they won't get most of my jokes.
I almost feel like the thing that you want to watch out for with Bridesmaids is that our hero is so enamored with John Hamm's character. Right? Mm-hmm. Kristen Wiig is so into John Hamm that she lets a guy basically, you know, exploit her and
but in the end, she gets beyond making bad decisions about relationships, so that was good.
But the idea is maybe a 13 or 14-year-old kid might not recognize it's not irony, literally.
Right, might not recognize that they're making fun of that kind of relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, but my 16-year-old daughter and her friend did. There's no doubt about it. The other movie I let them see was The Last Samurai, which is one of my favorite movies, which
That's
is not critically
the
acclaimed.
Only Tom Cruise movies I have not seen.
Oh, okay. And it
turns out I love Tom Cruise. I didn't know this, but it turns out that I'll watch Tom Cruise all the time.
Really? All right, well, let me talk about this movie.
Wait, which really are you really
I just
about?
Think you're so artsy, you wouldn't like Tom Cruise.
Oh, no, I'll dig the hell out of a Tom Cruise movie. I watched Edge of Tomorrow. I was thinking to myself the whole time, like, this is so good.
Edge of Tomorrow was not critically acclaimed. I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
The trailer sucked. I mean, it just sounded like you repeated this thing over and over again.
Yeah, they kind of...
They didn't really give you the...
They kind of bailed
good
on
sci-fi film.
Getting it out there anyway.
But The Last Samurai, my kids were little, actually, and I had watched it. And I said, look, you can watch this film. It's kind of cool. It's about Japanese culture and Western culture and, you know, feudal Japan transitioning to industrial Japan. Feudal, not futile.
Futile.
No, feudal with a D.
No, I hear you. Futile.
It's in the feudal system.
The feudal
I will come
system.
Over there and smack that smile right off your face. And I think the reason it was
How
rated
do you get through
R.
These bars, man?
It was rated R because at several junctures.
Heads were chopped off.
Heads were chopped off with the samurai sword. So I warned them. And actually, they both covered their eyes when that happened a few times. But it's a fascinating film. I don't regret it at all.
I've been watching The Fall on Netflix. It's a British series, BBC series, 11 episodes. And. I've cried at pretty much every episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the intensity of the emotions. And I mean, it's a serial killer, and there are violent, horrible scenes. I mean, he kills women, and you have to watch it. And it's not cool. I mean, you have to watch it if you're watching the show. And that was bad all. But then the scenes that would actually make me cry would be these scenes of emotional connection or bereavement or despair and just the intensity of because I think there's no way that I can suspend the disbelief entirely when, you know, a murder is being depicted. I know that they're not killing anybody. But then when it's about how someone's relating to their family or the despair of losing what they hoped that they would gain, you know, that kind of thing, like it was intense enough that it affected me so emotionally that I was puddled completely, you know, many times throughout the series. And I think that would be an important thing for anyone to know before they let children who are still developing in their emotional life,
right,
to
right.
see. And I think
and some children at the same age are more ready for that than others. It's an individual thing.
Yeah,
it's a parent decision. And I like
this
the
is
guidelines.
How it goes.
It's
this
a guideline.
And it's not, you know, hey, there's a nude person in this or people have sex or someone is killed. It's more like this show, you know, very carefully charts
a serial killer,
but also a person's loss of faith in their husband, loss of faith in their father, loss of faith in their institution, you know.
Right.
And I think
but some adults are not ready for those themes.
Yeah. But, you know, at a certain point, it's like, look, you're going to have to deal with this.
But Truth in Advertising, I did take my 13-year-old to see Ted, and that was an R-rated movie.
You blew that one.
No, I don't regret
that. No wonder he's addicted to video games.
No, because he knows, you know, there were some cheap sexual jokes. The teddy bear having sex with a woman in it was not anatomically correct. So how damaging can
Spoiler
that be?
Spoiler alert.
Oh, they know he's not anatomically correct. It's just funny. And my physician, my internist, he would take his 12, 13-year-old son to comedy clubs where they had, you know, edgy performances and things like that. I don't think that's not what's going to damage you. I think better to see that with your parents so you can talk about any issues related to
it. So you have a collective experience too.
Yeah, I think that's better rather than them seeing it on the internet, which they do and don't understand the context.
That's maybe a way to get back to your original question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very easy. We have all the tools in hand to say, hey, that story that we just saw together, or that music that we experienced together, or that painting that we looked at.
Yeah, with sort of interesting and complicated meanings.
Let's talk about how did that make you feel? Here's what I got out of it, right? Whereas it seems that we're not trained to have that sort of experience with the scientific theories that come out of
the facts,
ma'am,
just the facts.
Yeah, and in fact, it seems a lot of times, like as soon as we say, well, what do you think of this particular piece of information, you get into, you know, anti-vaccine activism,
mm-hmm.
you know? And if I can just take a moment to sort of plant a flag here.
Please do.
I read recently a post on Facebook, there is no anti-vaccine movement, and this person wrote a post where they very articulately described how it's not an anti-vaccine movement. A movement is a group of people who are trying to make something happen. I am just saying that I have the right to not vaccinate my children, and that you should not treat me like a fool because I have researched this, and you should not treat me like your enemy. And it is actually a pro-vaccine movement, and then people pushing for individual choice. That was their post.
Okay.
And a lot of people were like, huzzah, right? So I read this person's blog a little bit more because I was like, well, what's going on here? And three posts down from that, there's no anti-vaccine movement. There was a person, she said explicitly, don't vaccinate your kids, or if you're going to, use this less aggressive schedule. You know, immediately blowing apart her whole argument that there's no anti-vaccine movement. I'm just trying to do what I want to do. She was saying, here's what you should do. You should do things like me. You should not vaccinate as I have not vaccinated. You know? So the hell with that person. There is an anti-vaccine movement. And because there is one, there are measles, much more than there were just a few years ago, and whooping cough.
But see, this is my point. For you to understand the fundamentals of the science, you would realize that vaccines, with the exception of young people that have compromised immune systems, that's a totally different situation, are very sort of weak affronts to the immune system to trigger an antibody response. So there's nothing wrong with them. I will mention, though, when you say don't do this aggressive schedule, yeah, that's okay. We can be looking into that. To say don't vaccinate, I think that's crazy.
Let me point out again.
But lots of vaccines at one time do sometimes have cross
reactions. Sure. Let me go back to this. I'm saying
that's
okay. when this person wrote, there's no anti-vaccine movement. There's a pro-vaccine movement.
I agree. That's,
to then that, find that on that same there. Blog that yeah. she's saying, do this or do it like this. She's, you know, that's an anti-vaccine movement.
But I had, so as a scientist, I'll go to anecdotal information now. I had a flu shot and a tetanus booster in one day.
Did you feel a little
each
funny?
Other arm. And I could sense the additional strain of my immune system. Yeah, I had a little flu-like symptoms. I had it. I understood what they were for, and I'm an adult. That's okay. But when you do this to infants, if someone wants to research and say, look, we should spread it out over a month instead of all in one day, that's a legitimate scientific question we can look at. But those people aren't saying don't vaccinate your children.
Yeah.
Right?
No, they're not. I got bit by a dog that got away.
Okay.
You know, so I had to have the rabies series.
Okay. Now, do they really do that in the stomach with these really
no
long
longer.
Needles?
No.
Oh, how do they do it now?
Well, this was 10, 15 years ago. How long ago was that? This was 97, 96.
Okay.
So, whoa, almost 20 years ago. They had moved on from the stomach.
Okay.
The nurse said to me, so which side do you like to lean on when you sit?
Okay. So like, it's a butt shot.
Well, wait. I said, I don't know. I guess I lean sort of the left. So I was like, okay, we'll do 5 in that cheek and 6 in the other. Yeah. So there's 11 shots in my ass to start with.
All in one time? Or are you gonna
all at once, yeah. And then...
Why do they give you 11 shots? Why don't they just put it in an IV?
What do you want from me? And then 4 boosters.
Like
in the
days
arm.
Later?
Yeah. And these were, I don't know if I can really get this. I'm going to show you how she stuck it in my arm, and then you can say what you see, right?
So and then I can
she lined it up
pretend and, vomit. Okay, that's how most people give shots. Have you ever seen a shot given? Even in the arm.
She threw it.
It's like a dart.
Yeah.
They're doing whoop. That's how my wife gives me my flu shots when she used to do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's get the it in only there, time man. I've ever seen, like, the throw. It's always been, you know.
Right. It's not like she's throwing it across. But to get it in, you sort of pinch the skin and you do the wham, and then you push the clutch.
She let go of it.
Oh. Like, if she let go of it, then she's obviously a skunk barred dart aficionado.
And then she grabbed the...
But wasn't it a long needle? It's a pretty deep muscle shot.
Oh, yeah, it was a fucking torpedo.
Yeah, it's a deep muscle shot. Don't know why that pathology is there. But what people don't understand about injections is whether you put it just under the skin or deep muscle makes a difference. You have these immature T lymphocytes called Langerhans cells just beneath your skin. It makes a difference where you get the shot. Yeah. And obviously for rabies, they've determined it's best when they do deep muscle. What was the point of the shots? How did we get them?
So,
because you were talking about vaccines.
This brings to a close the second 52 episodes of Consilience.
But can I conclude that... whether it's science, which tends to present, you know, sort of more mature material as facts as opposed to the humanities, which deals with the emotional part, the best way for your kids to experience, I think, that is with you. So whether it's more scientific facts or the ramifications thereof, they get a good perspective by having your experience along with it.
Yeah, conversation about these concepts as opposed to the sort of... narrow delivery. I mean, that's what, whenever you talk about engagement, whenever you talk about, you know, getting
narrow delivery,
across.
Like your 11 injections in your hiney.
Let's record another outro.
Okay.
Consilience with Pete and Charlie is a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities. Why? This feels so fake.
Do it anyway.
Find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Bennett Radio, and Pete Ludovus.
Or you can find us on the back porch of Rocky Mountain Pizza in Midtown Atlanta drinking cheap beer.